3. Agent Miller sat with his left elbow hanging out the car window, right fingers drumming on the steering wheel. His eyes shifted focus at regular intervals between the building across the street he was assigned to watch and the car's rearview mirror, which he'd decided on his own to also keep an eye on. The car had been backed into a diagonal parking space. This had seemed like a lucky break at first, as it gave the agents an inconspicuous place to park with a clear view of their subject. Miller now realized that it left the rear of their car vulnerable to anyone walking down the sidewalk as he and his partner concentrated on their assignment, watching the luxurious Rothschild building. Agent Murphy sat in the passenger seat, poking at the trackpad of his laptop.
"You want to roll that window up? It's freezing!"
Miller growled, "I'd love to close the window, but if I do, the windshield fogs up. Not that you'd know it, staring at your computer while I watch the subject."
"The file's out there somewhere, Miller. We just have to find it again. And at least the laptop's generating a little bit of heat. You can roll the window up a little. Then the window wouldn't fog all the way up. And we'd still be able to see the luxurious Rothschild building."
"Yes, Murph, but just rolling the window part of the way up won't make it any warmer in here, will it? And you don't have to call it luxurious every time you mention it."
"That's the name of the building, Miller. The luxurious Rothschild building. That's what it says on the sign. That's what it says on Google Maps. That's what the building's called."
"Yeah, well, you can just say the Rothschild building. I'll know what you mean. Who puts luxurious in the name of a building anyway? What the hell even is that?"
Murphy shrugged.
"I don't know. It makes sure you know the building's luxurious. It's probably good marketing. Or maybe the guy the building was named after was called Luxurious Rothschild."
"Sounds like a pimp."
"We're in Reno. I'm sure a lot of the buildings are owned by pimps."
Miller glanced at the side mirror. He saw a smattering of tourists on the sidewalk for a moment before it was all eclipsed by the midsection of a young man in jeans, a denim jacket, and a plaid flannel shirt approaching with a thick stack of flyers in his hands. Miller groaned and pulled his arm back inside. The young man stooped down to greet Miller eye to eye. When he exhaled, the plume of his condensed breath extended into the car. He smiled and pushed one of his flyers into Miller's open window.
"Hey, sir, if you and your friend are looking for something to do later, why not?"
Miller stared into the young man's eyes, but said nothing as he cranked the window shut. The young man stopped talking, but kept the flyer extended so that it got caught in the window. As the glass extended into its slot at the top of the frame, the flyer bent and flapped downward as the young man stood up and walked back to the sidewalk behind the car. Miller mumbled,
"How they found a rental car with crank windows in this day and age, I'll never know."
Agent Murphy asked,
"What's the flyer say?"
Miller squinted at the tiny print.
"It invites us to follow the treasure trail."
Murphy shuddered.
"Jeez, is it for a casino or a brothel?"
"A casino. Declan's on the strip, about a block down from the arch. They have this stupid path of gold coins printed on the carpet. You follow it all the way to the back through a gauntlet of slot machines, and you get a free spin on a giant slot machine. Then you have to walk out through the gauntlet of slot machines, which is how they get you."
"What do you mean that's how they get you?"
"It's obvious, isn't it? They want you to lose all your money on their slot machines, so they make you walk through the whole casino."
"To play a giant slot machine?"
"Yeah. I don't see why this is so hard for you to understand."
"Oh, I understand," Agent Murphy said. "I just don't think that luring you in to play slot machines by promising to let you play a slot machine is as underhanded as you seem to think it is."
Agent Miller flapped his hand dismissively at his partner.
"Oh, pipe down. You just don't understand how gambling works."
"Not the same way you do, obviously. You should knock it off anyway. The director's not going to be happy if she finds out you're spending a lot of time at the casinos, Miller."
"What I do on my own time is none of her damn business, Murph."
"It'll reflect poorly on the task force."
"This is Reno. It's the biggest little eyesore in the world. The place you go when Vegas is too upmarket. Just being here reflects badly on the task force."
"But the scenery's beautiful."
"Yes. The area around Reno that isn't actually Reno itself is lovely."
Murphy said,
"It's better than riding a desk." "I don't want to go back to the desk, Miller. If we screw up and get yanked from this task force, that's right where we'll be.
If we're lucky. The Treasury Department probably won't want us back, after both Jimmy Sadler and Todd Douglas escaped. If they boot us from this task force, we're probably out of law enforcement for good.
Yeah. All the more reason not to screw up, okay?
Miller nodded.
Yeah. You're right, Murph. I just get a little... Crap! There he is!
Where?
Coming out of the building!
Which building?
What? The luxury... Shut up! Sadler's on the move!
Murphy leaned forward.
We'll see.
Across the street, a thin gentleman in his mid-50s, with a neat iron-gray goatee, wearing black slacks, a black polo shirt, and a checked sport coat, walked out of the front entrance of the luxurious Rothschild building where he lived. Both agents knew he was James Sadler, a.k.a. Jimmy, a.k.a. Merlin. Sadler buttoned the top button of his sport coat, as if that would do anything to ward off the chill. He stood on the sidewalk, breathing deeply. After several breaths, he put his arms out wide and spun around twice in a cartoonish show of enjoying his freedom.
Bastard! Miller snarled. Why the director won't let us move in and take him, I don't know.
It's because she figures he'll just escape again.
Thanks for that, Murph.
Well, you said you didn't know.
Yeah, I get it.
Miller jerked his head from side to side, checking the car's blind spots. He brought his hand up to the keys, which were hanging from the ignition. Murphy said,
You know he's just messing with us, Miller.
He doesn't know we're here.
You don't believe that.
I might.
Miller, 2 hours ago he came down, walked to his car. You tried to start the car.
Miller gave Murphy a look that stopped him mid-sentence. Murphy put up his hands and continued in a softer tone.
We both know what happened. Then he acted like he'd forgotten something and went back inside. An hour later, he came down and got in his car. The same thing happened again, and he got out of his car with some mail he'd left on the passenger seat and went back inside.
Yeah, and now he's gonna go somewhere. Look, he's getting in his car.
Across the street, Jimmy walked to the parking lot and slid into his glossy black two-door Lexus. Murphy closed his laptop and started to open his door.
At least let me check the back.
Miller grabbed Murphy by the arm, stopping him.
No time and no need. I've kept an eye on the rear view and nobody snuck up behind us, I'm sure of it.
Miller, we both know he can-
Will you stop talking? He's not onto us. Nobody snuck up behind the car. And look, he started his engine. I told you this time he was on the move.
The black Lexus moved forward and turned to the right, pulling out of its parking space. Miller said,
Here we go.
He turned the key and started the car. The engine rumbled to life, purred for about 3 seconds, then coughed, sputtered, and died. The fan blew full blast and a chime sounded from deep inside the dash, but no sound came from the engine. Miller shouted,
Damn it!
Across the street, Jimmy put the Lexus in reverse, pulled back into the parking space he'd just left, and killed the engine. Miller again shouted,
Damn it!
Murphy said, Just shut the car off, Miller.
Miller gritted his teeth so hard that it felt like his incisors might crack. But he turned the key, silencing the chime and the fan. They heard people laughing behind the car. Murphy asked,
Shall I go get it?
Miller turned and looked at him silently.
Yeah,
Murphy said.
I'll go get it. You stay here.
Miller continued to stare as his partner got out of the car, then looked back at Jimmy sitting in his Lexus across the street. He heard the laughter continue, and the voice of the young man with the flyers say,
Hey, man! It looks like you fell for the banana in the tailpipe!
The laughter from the tourists grew louder.
Yeah,
Murphy laughed insincerely.
Looks like it.
Some unseen woman said,
Classic, banana in the tailpipe. It stops at the exhaust and makes the car stall.
Yeah, Murphy interrupted. We all know why. Everyone saw the movie.
A young man said,
I'd heard it doesn't work, though. Saw it on TV where they tried and couldn't get it to work.
Murphy said,
Yeah, well, I suppose this must be some kind of magic banana, then.
Murphy continued to make small talk about bananas, tailpipes, and Beverly Hills Cop, but Miller tuned it all out, watching Jimmy get out of his Lexus, looking irritatingly pleased with himself, almost skipping back into the luxurious Rothschild building. Murphy got back in the car, clutching a dirty, soot-smeared banana. Miller said,
I watched. I watched the rearview mirror. I watched both side-view mirrors. There's no way anyone snuck up behind the car and stuck a banana in our tailpipe without me seeing.
Miller, it's Jimmy. We've seen him teleport. We know he can make things appear and disappear out of thin air. He clearly used his powers to put the banana in our tailpipe, what, 3 times now? I mean, it shouldn't even work. That's a dead giveaway.
Across the street, Jimmy continued his stroll away from the parking lot, exchanged some friendly banter with the doorman, then disappeared into the building, briefly turning his head to let his vision sweep across the street. He cast a surreptitious look at Miller and Murphy and let them see the smile on his face.
Why?
Miller asked.
Why would he go to the trouble to keep putting bananas in our tailpipe when he knows it shouldn't work?
It really bugs you, doesn't it?
Yeah!
Well, there's your answer. The end goal is to bother us and inconvenience us, and we get a chorus of tourists laughing and wanting to talk to us about the banana in the tailpipe and how it's not actually supposed to work. He knows us. Let's be honest. He knows you well enough to know that that'll drive you crazy.
But still, why? If he knows we're watching him, why not just ditch us?
Murphy shrugged, reopening his laptop.
I figure 2 reasons. One is that he's not worried about us. And the other is that he's a jerk.
Miller thought for a long moment.
I can't argue with that.